Blog Talk Radio.
I am me. I am who I am. I am who I'm gonna be. Walking in the spirit, moment by moment, fulfilling my own destiny. I am me. I am who I am, I am who I'm gonna be. Walking in the spirit, moment by moment, fulfilling my own destiny.
Fulfilling my own destiny. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in this great, big, vast world of ours. I am Cindy Freeman, your host of Purpose Talk Radio. And today is Friday, October 15th. It is known nationally in the United States as White Cane Day. We'll go into a little bit of some history of some other things. It's White Cane Safety Day. We are also in October being Blind Awareness Month. We also are with the National Federation of the Blind, what used to be called Meet the Blind Month, and now Blind Equality Achievement Month, which is much more in line with what the organization has done. We'll get a little bit of the history on that. And as part of that today, I'm going to have two guests, Stacy Fuhr and Jennifer Wenzel, talking about their life and how they function with blindness. But in the meantime, I'd also like to let you know the song you just heard, which is called I Am Who I Am by the group True Trinity. The writers of that are Jillian Clark, who was the vocalist on it, Rachel Grace, and myself. Wrote that several years ago and part of that, and it came really in line with what Purpose Talk Radio is. Basically, we talk about living your purpose, whatever that means, whoever you are, whatever it is. You know, it can be from the person cutting the lawns outside to the CFO of a company. It does not matter. Whatever you're doing is living your purpose at the moment, which is why we'll be talking to our two guests. We have an opportunity for you to call into the show if you'd like and to be a part of it. And to do that, there's several ways that you can be a part of the show. One, if you are on the Blog Talk Radio page for this show, all the way down, there is a chat room for those who are blind or visually impaired. I honestly do not know how well that works, but you're probably better off making the phone call and listening via the phone. You can, if you're getting it on the computer here, you can call into 563-999-3622. Again, that phone number is 563-999-3622. Those of you who do know my text number, if you've got questions, you can do that directly also. We do have discussion about the show after it and the Facebook page, Purpose Talk Radio Conversations, where you can ask questions about the show and talk to guests. I can relay questions to the guests and have them answer that. We may ask them to join that later as well. And what else? Where else can we have you do that? That's probably the best ways to participate in this show. And I'll invite people to call in throughout the show as well. If you want to ask a question, press 1, and the system should tell me that you're there. If you're just listening, I may check in with you anyway, periodically as I can. And I think that is most of the general information that I need to give out today. We don't always broadcast on Fridays, but mostly it's Fridays at noon Pacific time, 3 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. in the UK. And if you have a topic for this show, you can email me at cindy@purposetalkradio.com, C-I-N-D-Y, at P-U-R-P-O-S-E-T-A-L-K-R-A-D-I-O.com. Or if you'd like to be a guest on the show, and we can talk about the specifics of that. And so in the meantime, I see we just lost one of our callers, but maybe they went through on the, I know that number, so it was okay. I am going to unmute our two guests and introduce you to them, and hopefully they hear that. And so we have got two guests for the show today, and they are Stacy Fuhr and Jennifer Wenzel. And I just didn't unmute them the way I wanted to. There we go. All these new buttons.
Hello.
Hello. There we go. All these, I got the new buttons on this dashboard, I just realized, for the show. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about these folks, and then we'll ask we'll get some general questions. There's a couple of specific topics I'd like to discuss, and then a couple of things also come back to some general stuff before we're done. So we'll take questions at the end. If you type them in the chat room before that and they're relevant to what we're asking, we may put them in there. So let's see. Stacy was born blind and attended public school, and there is some feedback on one of the two lines. I don't know which of you are listening elsewhere. Maybe just down your volume a little bit. But she was introduced to the National Federation of the Blind, which is known very often as the NFB by most of us, as a senior in high school. She won a state scholarship in 2001. She attended the National Convention that summer in Philadelphia. So that means she traveled, which is one of the things we're going to be talking about, how that works. She attended college in La Crosse, Wisconsin, obtained a bachelor's degree in communication in 2005, and obtained her first full-time job a year later. In 2006. She got her first guide dog, and I didn't put in here, I think it was 2004, before she was finished college and was working, and has had guide dogs, I believe, all the way through till currently, including currently. Stacy has lived in several cities, and she now resides and works in Milwaukee with her guide dog, and I'll let you tell her exactly what she does in her work. Our other guest is Jennifer Wenzel, who also was born blind and was the first blind student to attend a public school in Watertown, Wisconsin. She also is a member of the NFB and has a bachelor's degree in communication, and that was not planned when I did this. It was interesting to get the background and find out that it was the same. And has worked in blind rehabilitation for over 20 years and is doing that also currently. I found something very interesting, that she's had a job as a Braille proofreader as well. And that I find kind of fascinating, being a proofreader, a freelance proofreader myself. Not for Braille. Not going to happen. I'm lucky. I can get to identify these days. It works, you know. But Jennifer is married, has three sons, and can tell you a little bit about how that is, let alone sons as opposed to raising children in general. Jennifer moved between Minnesota and Milwaukee for her job, enjoys many things, including cooking, baking, shopping, and traveling. So welcome to both of you.
Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Yeah, great to be here.
Yeah. So we want to talk a little bit about, part of your involvement at this point in life, I know, is to be on the part of the National Federation of the Blind to support some stuff what you do. Feel free to incorporate how that helps you in any of your things. I don't think we're going to do a specific on that right now, but all of this is related to the Milwaukee chapter, which I came to know both of you through, and the state of Wisconsin. And how that they support blind people in their everyday living and working lifestyle. And what I'd like to do now is just generally, let's talk some terminology, because people have heard me talk about blind versus visually impaired and say it's deaf versus visually impaired. You can't say hearing impaired. That community doesn't like that. You don't want to say anymore wheelchair bound, it's wheelchair users, things like that. So when we talk about the terminology regarding blind people, do you say someone who is blind? Do you say you are blind? Is it visually impaired? What is your preference, and is it your preference or is it a community preference, can you say, for some of that terminology. I'll ask Stacey first on that at this point.
Well, I think it's definitely person-first language. So kind of what you were a little bit alluding to, Cindy, you know, person who is blind versus, you know, blind person. Definitely I know the NFB as a, you know, general term, even if you have some vision, you know, the NFB and its philosophy generally encourages, you know, person who is blind, you know, not that in my book there's anything wrong with saying visually impaired if a particular person, you know, has that preference, I guess. But, you know, person who is blind is definitely appropriate, and I would say more appropriate than, oh, there's a blind person, you know, at the crosswalk, or, for example, or in the store, or whatever the case.
Okay. Jennifer?
I prefer blind. I think it keeps it clean and simple. And I know blind to some people has a lot of negative connotations, and I really hope that the more that it's used, that it stops having some of those negative connotations. I think I think the blindness community is kind of split. And so for some people, especially if they have some vision, they don't like to be, even though they might be legally blind, they don't necessarily like to be termed blind. I'm not a fan of impaired, visually impaired. I feel like impaired implies damage or you're broken. I prefer like people with low vision, or I'm not a big fan of vision loss either, I guess, because the loss seems to me more negative, but that I still think is better and more accurate than impaired. But I know a lot of people do use impaired and are not offended by it. So I guess it depends who I'm speaking with, or if that's something that someone prefers, I can handle it. The one I really hate and I think is very out of date is visually handicapped. I think that's a very outdated term and shouldn't be used. So, but I don't know that our community is – I know within the NFB it's very much blind is a positive term and it should be used for anyone, regardless of if you're legally blind, you are blind. You are a blind person. And there's some pride in that, and that's a great thing. But I think there's many others who haven't reached that acceptance level yet and really want, you know, a different kind of term being used.
All right. And I know, jumping off that as well and further expanding on it, I know blindness is considered a disability as far as Social Security disability is concerned. And there are some folks that can't work or it's been determined they can't work for either periods of time as they're adjusting to that blindness, perhaps going through some training, learning about life in general, those kinds of things. Where are you on that, Jennifer?
I think that, I mean, to me, I don't consider it a disability. It's just a normal part of life. But I'm glad that it was considered a disability so that I was able to do some things like gain some training. I think it's so important. I think it definitely is very disabling when people are first diagnosed with blindness or visual impairment, because it means that there needs to be a different way to function, to do the things that you used to do. So training can be involved with that. And so, yes, for a period of time, you most likely can't work. Or there may be times, for instance, when I was raising my children, I could work, but I also needed to be home with my kids, and I couldn't just go to McDonald's and grab a job there or some of the other jobs that people grab for part-time work. So, you know, I think that it is important, but I think that we also need to be careful because people can, when they have the proper skills and the proper opportunity, they definitely can work. And so I think it's important to try to eventually get to where you can be working and not using that. But I'm glad that it is classified in that way at this time so that people can get some of those benefits and it can be very helpful.
Yeah. I mean, it was helpful to me because I was able to go to school and change my career at this point too.
Absolutely. That's important.
We're working now and figuring out where all the things are and what point I can work full-time, part-time, and move back into that part of society. And I'm really looking forward to it. You know, and the NFB has been a great support for me on that, as well as, you know, you guys and the members I've associated with. So, Stacey, did you have anything you wanted to add to that?
No, I don't really feel I have anything to add. I think Jennifer pretty much covered it.
Okay. So I'm going to ask each of you at this point, you obviously moved, you were born blind, so I can't say, you know, what, maybe I can say, what do you miss? Is there something that you have heard sighted people talk about? And what is the main difference? I mean, it's a large, expanded question. You can go, probably go on forever on it. But what do you miss, or what do you wish, or do you wish anything that you could see, or how your life is different from a sighted person? It's probably a pretty loaded question. Either of you can jump in.
It's kind of a loaded question.
Stacey, do you want to go first, or do you want me
sure,
to jump?
I'll go first. I guess, at least for me, actually, so my grandfather, who's still alive, still on my mom's side, it's kind of interesting because he transported me to public school for a while for the last couple of years of my public school career. And sometimes he would ask, you know, yeah, like, you know, if you could, you know, see, would you want to? And, you know, it's kind of interesting because I'm like, well, maybe. I'm like, but I feel like sometimes the transition would be just kind of like what Jennifer was saying, just the opposite of somebody who, an adult or, you know, a teenager who's losing their vision. I feel like the transition to vision would be really overloading. And just teaching the areas of the brain that are probably now used for other, you know, other senses and, like, you know, to help compensate for the missing sense. I'm just imagining those centers of the brain. It would be really, really hard to get them to say, oh, no, now you can look, you know, and they just be on overload. So, yeah, I don't know. It's kind of a toss-up for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for me, that's a really interesting question. So I have three sons, and my youngest son and I have talked about this quite a bit because he's very into photography. And one thing I would love, if I could see, I would love to see his photos. You know, he describes them to me. I'd love to see those. I'd love to see my oldest son is learning to fly a plane. He's going to be a pilot. I'd love to see the view from up there. I've flown up there, but it'd be kind of a cool thing. But I know that I've also experienced those things in other ways, and so that's okay with me, and I'm not going to sit around, you know, bemoaning the fact that I can't, what I don't have, you know. Mm-hmm. But like Stacey said, we've talked about, like, what if suddenly I could see it? I haven't seen for my whole life. So I think for me, and I didn't even realize until I had kids, really, how much visual information there is out there in the world all the time. And I was telling my son the other day, I don't know if I'd get anything done if I could see. I think I would be like those dogs and up. I'd be just constantly distracted by squirrel. Oh, yeah, there's this there, there's this there. Because I know eventually I'd probably be able to filter that, but I think at first it would be just incredibly, you know, I wouldn't be able to read. I'd have to read Braille anyway because I don't think I could just instantly read print, you know. So
exactly.
I think it's different, though. If, you know, if you've seen before, there's probably maybe more that people. But I also think that being a blind mom, I gained some things that other parents didn't have. I didn't have a car to shuttle my kids back and forth, so we walked a lot when they were younger, and we got to spend time talking and, you know, talking about nature and walking. My kids know about public transit options that a lot of other kids didn't know about. So I think there's some add-ins that, you know, that kind of make up for some of the things that you might miss.
Yeah. Well, you talk about that brain thing. That was one of the biggest things. I still go from, you know, I was nearsightedness, seven blind, and then farsighted now. And there's words I look at and don't recognize the words. We're talking years later, you know, we might tell you what a color is, but there's no way that when you see it, you could even recognize it. You know, so I understand and I've heard several people say that, you know, if they could take away what, quote unquote, the rest of the world thinks is a disability, would they do it? And a lot of people say no, because they're functioning. They've learned to adapt, and that's the key to all of this, is you making the adaptations in work, in life, in school, to be able to move whatever happens in your life, you know, to become the person you've been. So I want to transition that a little bit into, both of you went to college, both of you, you know, grew up and are living very functioning lives. So what kind of adaptations have you had to do over the years to be able to get to that point? We'll talk specifically about the family and the guide dogs when we're done with this. But, you know, types of adaptations, whether it be technology, conversations with people, whatever there might be, you know, in all of that.
Well, I've always been a Braille reader, so that's been something I've used in all my schooling. And now I do it more electronically with a refreshable Braille display that I can connect to my computer. I can connect it to my phone. I can load reading material into it. But that's still my primary medium, and I use it. I can process information best when I can have it under my fingertips in Braille. And I'm a big note taker. I'm always writing notes in Braille. Usually use my Braille display now to do that. I used to use like a Slate and Stylus or a Braille writer, but that's always been a big thing for me. My cane is a huge thing for me for independence, for travel. I couldn't function without that. I need it, you know, to tell me all kinds of great information. And to get around. What else? I've always been a problem solver. You tell me I can't do something, I'll try to figure out a way I can. And I think that problem solving attitude and kind of taking the initiative and trying harder because I don't want to be told I can't because I'm the blind person has helped me in all my jobs. I'm now the talent acquisition coordinator at Beyond Vision, and I always try to help people. You know, someone might call me and say, oh, I can't do this job because I don't have enough vision. And I try to say, you know, what are your skills? What can you do? You can do many, many things. Vision doesn't play into, you know, it doesn't make you make or break you for a successful career.
And we've talked about, in the NFG, we've talked about a lot of careers. And we've got, there are, and this is going to floor people, there are blind surgeons, at least one that we know of. I don't know, do we have a blind pilot yet? I thought I heard something somewhere.
I don't think so.
We've had and are moving more toward blind being able to operate cars. You know, as we've done a blind challenge, and that, I did that interview with our current national president, Mark Riccobono, years ago when he did the drove the car. You know, and we're moving more toward a lot of this technology. Is there something that you wish, I guess, was out there? If we could play, you know, snap a magic wand, the technology is advancing so much. We're looking for other things. What would you like to see either from, let me rephrase a little bit, the technology that goes forward or from people you interact with on a regular basis?
Wow, that's a loaded question. There's so much technology out there now that, you know.
I would like technology.
I don't know.
I would like, I'll tell you what I'd like, but I don't think it'd be ever possible. But I would love technology that could tell you when you entered a room exactly who was in the room so that you could walk right to that person. For networking, that would be a huge bonus. But I don't think it'll ever exist. But, you know, like if you're at a conference, maybe it could read the name tags and like just be in your ear. Charlie Smith is to your left. You know, John Doe is straight ahead of you. That would be a super handy tech for me.
Okay. Well, I don't know. I mean, we've got
to be who knows? Maybe they'll make an app for that. I mean, you never know.
Making an app, you never know.
Yeah.
Oh, that'll be cool. Okay. So when we talk about people in general, how have you been able to maneuver through people who say, like Jennifer said, you can't do that? Is there a... I know there's not a padded answer for that, but when people say that, obviously you both said, want to watch me? you know, tell me that again and I'll prove you wrong. But, you know, when people are newly blind, you know, you do hear that a lot. Mm-hmm. How do you do that? How do I, you know, where can people go for information if they want to know how to do something or how to help someone who is blind do something?
A lot of times, and I'm sure, Jennifer, you'll probably have a similar answer, but a lot of times, because I've had that conversation, too, with some people. In fact, you know, we've got a chapter member who's, you know, relatively newly blind in the last year. Very nice young gentleman. And we had a long talk one day about just kind of that very thing you were asking, Cindy. And, you know, I was directing him to some apps like Be My Eyes or iRock for certain things because it's like, oh, what if I have a canned good and I don't know, you know, is there anything on my phone, you know, or we were talking about, you know, he's like, well, I really like to read the sports section in the paper. And so I, you know, directed him to Newsline, and which for those listeners is a online system that has several newspapers and magazines and other publications from around the country now. And you can, it's basically available in every state. And you can either read it on a touchtone phone. You can read, there's an app now for a smartphone. I believe now you can even read it on Alexa. So there are several ways to access that, and you can read articles and different things like that. And so, yeah, we were having a really nice conversation, and he was like, wow, there's this out there, there's this. And it was really a neat conversation, and I was, you know, pleased that I was able to give him a little bit of direction and confidence, I feel. You know, that's, you know, you can do it.
And there's,
yeah,
two
and
apps,
sometimes
there's
like,
other apps. There's other apps you mentioned. Just jump in. The IRA will basically give you directions, right, no matter where you are, tell you what's next to you,
it
what
can.
The buildings are,
yeah,
all of that kind of thing as well.
If you
so
ask, I mean, you, it's up to you to ask the question, but you're actually
okay.
Connected to a real-life person. You're connected to a real-life person who's specifically been trained by the company IRA. And IRA, for anybody who is interested, is spelled A-I-R-A. And they're actually trained by the company, and they're paid to be live agents. It's actually a job for them. Okay. So you can call, and, yeah, I could call, let's say, today when I was out on a walk. If I needed directions, I could have pulled out my phone, called the agent. They use, like, Google Maps and Google Street, and they have certain features on their side that they can also use. But you can also point your phone's camera. Yeah, they can see the buildings. They can read the signs. They can, you know, and I'll say, even sometimes I'll do that even in my home area. I'll say, well, I think I'm going close to this door or this bus stop. I know I'm going the general way. Can you just help me, point me the last little bit? For example, they really saved the day for me about 6 weeks ago. I was actually going to our chapter picnic. And the bus stop that I wanted to use, there was construction, and the bus stop was moved a block because of it. Well, I didn't know that. It's not a bus stop that I frequent. I didn't know. I wanted to confirm with the agent that, oh, okay, is this the right – am I at the bus stop, basically, so that I wouldn't miss the bus? And the agent's
right.
Like, oh, yeah, you're at the bus stop, but hold on. I think I see a sign here up on the pole. Can you point your phone up so I can read it? Well, thankfully they did. They're like, oh, yep, it says it's moved a block to this street. And I was like, okay, well, I know how to get to this street, but I didn't know where the temporary stop was. So they're like, yeah, no problem. I can stay on the line until we get closer. And so I did that. And I'm like, okay, I think I see something coming up. Well, it was a handwritten piece of paper literally taped to a tree that said, board route 53 eastbound here, which is the route I needed. But it was just nice to be able to have that technology. Nobody was around. There wasn't a pedestrian I could ask. So it was just that extra boost of confidence that they're basically in your pocket and you can call whenever you want. They're actually open 24/7, 365.
Okay.
So that was really helpful for me that particular trip because I didn't know.
Yeah, you got a construction person that's really nice probably to put up a sign that's, you know, we're blocking off that thing, so we're going to put you here, but they're not going to think about that, you know?
Well, and this was a weekend. So, I mean, when I did it wasn't like it was even during the week. So nobody was around. Yeah.
Right.
So.
And then some of the other apps talking about, like, reading labels for you and things like that as well.
Go ahead, Cindy. I'm sorry.
You mentioned another app, and I can't remember what it was. I'm sorry.
Oh, Be My Eyes.
My Eyes, that one. So.
And that's a volunteer service. It's similar. I don't think it's as elaborate as IRA in terms of, like, if you need help traveling. But if you need help, oh, what color's my shirt? What's this can? You know, simple things like that. That's a volunteer app. And I believe everybody registers for it, and you can call. And there's also other scanning apps on the phone even that you can use to take pictures of stuff and read. You know, you don't even need a person for it always.
Oh, and part of why I'm...
Yeah, there's so much up there.
Great. And part of why I'm asking you to explain to me, but, you know, we've got folks that are getting older that are losing their eyesight, and, you know, they may or may not be app. But some of this stuff is pretty easily accessible, like you said, with a phone or just a tablet or something. So,
yep. Yep. Absolutely. Sure. There's so much out there. There's an app called Way Around that you can get these tags that you put information on them, and then you point your phone at the tag, and it can tell you, like, can help you match clothing or label your files. I mean, there's even a little device called a Pen Friend that does a similar thing that people can get where you can record information on little stickers. So you can put a sticker on, say, your frozen food box, and, you know, and someone can record directions for you, and then you can point the little pen at that box. So there's so much out there for seniors. And there's even low-tech things like, you know, you can put a rubber band around your shampoo. You know, there's very simple things that can make life easier that, you know, sometimes people don't think of. And for resources, you had asked about resources before. I know that National Federation of the Blind, nationally and in our state, in Milwaukee, in La Crosse, in Green Bay, we have an at-large chapter. You know, people can be resources for each other, and they can help, you know, look up information. There's also there's some great blindness training centers. The closest one near us in Minnesota is called Blind Incorporated. They're a great training center for blindness skills. But there's also, you know, here in Milwaukee, we have Vision Forward that does a great job of, you know, giving people information and blindness skills and those tips and tricks and things like that that they need. So there's, you know, good resources in states. And, you know, especially blind seniors can get connected with other blind seniors. There's often, you know, things like support groups that can help you make connections and learn a lot of those tips and learn that you're not alone and you don't have to be, you know, you can still remain independent. There's even an accessible pharmacy now it's connected with Be My Eyes, I believe, and you can get, you know, prescription information and other ways of managing your own medication, which can be really critical for seniors as well.
Okay. Nice. Okay. And then what were specific things that you used going through your career or your, you know, schooling and things? I kind of cut you off on that earlier.
Oh, so that's okay.
I was asking Stacey to describe the apps, Jennifer, when I was talking to a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of cut off what you were going to answer to that.
In my career? I did say I used Braille. I used my cane. I used textbooks on tape cassette, which isn't a thing anymore.
Yeah,
I don't know,
too.
Stacey.
So
by the time you went to school, did you use tape
too?
No.
Yep, it was still there.
It was still there.
That's been 20 years or so almost.
Now, today, I use a computer with JAWS as a screen reader, which is, it stands for Jobs Access with Speech. It's a very great, very powerful screen reader. So it reads to me information that's on the screen, and with that I can use, you know, things like Microsoft Office and Excel and Microsoft Teams. And I use Zoom quite a bit in my job. I use a smartphone. My personal phone is an Android, a Samsung phone, but my work phone is an iPhone. I use those both with screen reading software. I use my Braille display in my job every day. What else?
It's going from Android to iPhone is crazy for someone sighted.
I like keeping up on all the text, so I like having both options. And, you know, if it's not working well on one, I can switch to the other sometimes, which is great. I like to always have a backup plan. So those are the main things I use. I mean, I use my cane. I use IRA. You know, I use a lot of the apps that Stacey was talking about. On my job, probably IRA often as an app. Envision AI, which I use quite a bit, that actually can read it has a lot of different capabilities, but one of the things I use it for is it can read, it can describe photos, and it can also read PDFs really well, and it can even read handwritten text that's filled in on some forms, which is really handy.
Oh, my.
It does a pretty good job, even when someone...
one.
Yeah, someone faxed something upside down to us one day, and it still did a really good job. It only missed like two things, so I was pretty impressed.
Wow.
Yeah,
and JAWS has a built-in feature that can scan and read, scanned images, but it doesn't do well with handwriting, so sometimes I have to switch to Envision AI, which is handy.
Wow. Yeah, that's one of the things I've heard mostly from people is it doesn't read handwriting. You can't get asked to read it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Envision AI will. It works pretty well. I have to say good things about, and I think Seeing AI, which is another one that is just for iPhones, is starting to read more handwritten text as well. I haven't used that as much.
Really nice. Okay, cool. See, we keep learning from each other here.
Yeah.
I learned of a new app today. Thank you.
Yeah, check it out. Envision AI is great. It works for iPhones and Android. So you have to pay. There is a subscription. You can either pay monthly or yearly, but it's worth it. It works really well.
Yeah, sounds like it.
Well, and I'm thinking too. In some of these cases, if you need it for work, you ask employers to if they are willing to subscribe to that. Or you put it into your plan for work because, we get the adaptive technology under the Americans with Disabilities Act and things like that where, companies are needing to, again, buy this adaptive technology. And I am, I'd like to say my career choice allows me to say, oh, I know exactly everything about that. But, when it comes to actually getting an employer to do something like that, or a school to get you the adaptive technology. I think that's where I started going with this question. How do you get that? Is there a nice, you want to be nice, you want to be polite, and that's what I remind people in everything. But how can you suggest something to get the technology or the adaptations that someone needs without them going, oh, it's too expensive?
I think it's having that polite conversation and really sitting down and figuring out what's reasonable. What do you need to do the job and what would be like a wish list that, okay, this could be great and helpful, but I don't absolutely need it. And working through the needs first and then maybe as you continue in the job, maybe going to some of those wish lists and maybe being willing. So like, for instance, my job has provided a laptop and JAWS and, that is wonderful, but I got my own Braille display partly because I also wanted to use it for my own personal reading and I didn't feel like that was fair for a work device. So sometimes if you can do that, having some compromise, like, okay, I'll do this, you do this, I think is important. Also maybe helping employers find resources, like maybe the Department of Vocational Rehabilitation can help you get adaptive equipment. Maybe there's loan available other places. Maybe there are funds that the company has, larger corporations have funds for things like this, so it doesn't have to break the bank of, a one office to do this. And maybe you can share licenses. And maybe a device can be, or a program can be licensed for several different machines, so several different employees might benefit,
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's always ways to do it. And I think that politeness, that not compromising what you really need, but not being, there's a fine line between being demanding and being firm and advocating for yourself.
Right.
It's a balancing act for sure.
Yeah. What would you, do you have more to add to that, Stacey? I don't know if I've covered that clearly.
Yeah, I think you pretty much did. There's always, now I haven't used this particular resource very much, just kind of throwing this out there. There's always the Job Accommodation Network as well, which I believe is a national resource. I don't have a lot of experience with it. Yeah, me too. I don't have a lot of experience with it, but I definitely know it's out there as another avenue to get accommodations. And I think they might even help advocate if I'm correct. I'm not 100% sure about that.
But and I'm really fortunate. Stacey and I are fortunate right now because our company, they're all about making everything accessible for everyone.
Exactly.
And wanting people to have what we need. So we're kind of spoiled in that regard.
Yes, very much.
Beyond Vision is great.
My
about,
last company,
you know,
was as well. So I haven't needed to do too much of advocating, like, until two jobs ago. And actually, they were pretty, my first full-time employer, you know, they even were pretty good about, like, they actually purchased jobs, which was really, because I needed an update. DVR bought my first one when I started.
Oh, and then you
and
needed
then
an
like, okay, right, because they changed their Windows upgrade and all that, and the version I had, you know, wasn't working.
I think
so,
it's,
yeah,
it's about having
purchase, so.
It's also about having added value to the employer. So, you know, I bring you this, this, and this, and, you know, so I'm going to make it worth the accommodation. You know, it's my attitude's always been if they're going to invest in me and give me these accommodations, I'm going to work twice as hard to make sure I really add value to the company, and, you know, they don't worry about, they don't even think about that. That's kind of my attitude toward it.
Right. Okay. Yeah, that job accommodations network is really good about suggesting ways to adapt specific jobs even, you know, and it's for a person with a disability as well as the employer. The employer can call and say, hey, I just got someone who is blind. What do I do? They've got to go up on a ladder to pull this thing off the shelf once again. You know, whatever. I'm about this. You know, what can we do? Can they really do that? You know, and they're really good at suggesting things like that, you know. Cool. And then I know there's another thing for folks to read books and things like that, which is Bookstrip. You know, to be able to get either a print, a PDF, a Word doc, you know, a lot of those are available too for folks. So, and that's too a subscription if there's a discount with any kind of quote-unquote disability. Okay, I'm going to get into some of the two specific areas that we wanted to talk about as we're going here. I'm just watching somebody that was on here, and I think I'm hoping is gone. So that's why I kind of lost contact here. I'm just watching somebody. At this point, let's see. Let's go to working with guide dogs first, I think. Because we're into the transfer. We've been talking a lot about transfer and traveling and things like that. So, Stacey, you've had a guide dog. I don't know if you've had one at all or if you've always been a cane user. Okay.
I've always been a cane user.
Okay. So I'm going to let Stacey handle this. You know, talk to us about guide dogs, some of the, you know, I guess, some of the process to get a guide dog briefly. Some of the etiquette that we should know as people on the street. I know there's one very specific one that people just don't listen to, you know, and things like that for you. And how does the guide dog make your everyday possible?
So there are roughly, and this number fluctuates a little bit, but there are roughly a dozen schools around the country. We'll focus on the United States. There are roughly a dozen schools around the country that people can receive dogs from. Some of them are, you know, smaller than others. They're all nonprofit. So they get no, you know, government funding, anything like that. They get all their money from corporations or individuals, that type of foundations, that type of thing. There's a small one, actually, that's based here in Wisconsin. It's called OccuPaws, and that's based out of Madison. They focus more on doing in-home training with their clients. So they come to your home area and train with you and your dog once the team is selected. All schools, though, you do have to apply. And I sort of compare applying for a guide dog, if somebody is applying to a college or university, they all have their pros and cons, and it's very, very important to do your research. Call the schools, ask questions. That's what they're there for. Read on their website.
you know, do your research. Some schools are bigger than others. Some schools have better follow-up after you get home with your dog than others. If you have a problem and you need a trainer to come see you. Me, for example, I'm on my sixth dog right now. I've gotten all six of my dogs from the Seeing Eye in New Jersey. They are the oldest school in the country. They were founded in 1929. And right now I have a yellow lab, and her name is Oneida, and we've been together almost 2.5 years now. And I remember when I was starting to think about a dog, I was a senior in high school. I didn't get my first dog till I was 22, but I was considering it. And I remember an orientation mobility instructor said, you know, he's like, yeah, you know, you're becoming a really good traveler. He's like, I feel like you'd be a good candidate if you ever decide. Well, I'll never forget what he said after that. He said, keep in mind when you're looking at schools, the follow-up after you are home is one of the biggest criteria. You know, if a trainer, if needed, can come see you. And I'll never forget that. And that was one of the things that I really focused on when I did my research. And it's paid off with certain partnerships more than others. I've needed more visits, or, you know, I've needed the extra help occasionally. So, yeah, it's definitely important to do your research when looking for a dog. I guess, to me, in terms of what you asked Cindy about day-to-day life, let's say walking down the sidewalk. In fact, she did this today when we were out earlier, which is exactly what she should do. Walking down the sidewalk, there was maybe a bus stop shelter. There was maybe, I don't know what she all went around. People, definitely. There were some people standing in the sidewalk. And she made a move and went around those people and continued on her way. Not saying that a good cane user like Jennifer can't manage that, because she can. but it does. I feel like, and this is, I think a lot of handlers would say this, you walk faster with a dog because you don't have to, you know, your dog has the eyes. Your dog should take you around, you know, those people or those planters or those parking meters or light poles or, I mean, you name it, whatever it is. You know, do they make mistakes? Of course they do, their dogs, you know, but in general, I feel like even in unfamiliar areas, sometimes you know, a cane is great, but dogs are a lot of work. You have to keep their skills up. You have to work them. I mean, you don't have to work them miles a day, but you need to try and get them walks. You need to try to get them walks in different types of weather, snow, rain. You know, not 50 below zero by any means. That's not safe. Just like 100 degrees. You know, common sense here. Mm-hmm. You know, keep both of you safe. But, I mean, definitely, you know, keeping their skills up as much as you can is good. Of course, you've got the added financial responsibility that builds illness, you know, potentially dealing with the grief of losing your dog, whether it's death itself, whether it's retirement. Retirement's never easy. You've developed that bond with your dog. And it's never easy to say goodbye. They're more than just a pet. You know, you're with them basically 24/7, you know, as a rule. It's hard. That bond is tough to break.
Okay. And there is a point where, like you said, the dog is also a pet and is not working, you know, so you might go out and play and let the dog play or have someone play, you know, throw the ball, catch, whatever, watch where the dog goes.
Yep.
You know, all those kinds of things. So they're not, you know, at home probably, yes, they're more of a guard dog even at home, just like any other dog would be. You know, you want them to bark and let you know what's going on, you know, somebody's at the door or whatever. But at the same time, they're not necessarily needed probably in your own home to take you from the couch to the door because you know where that is, you know.
Exactly.
Or you might give them a rest at that point.
Correct. Basically, anytime they are not in harness, they are dogs. They're pet. I mean, within reason, but they're dogs. They're not focused on their work. Like you said, yes, they can play. They have toys. They have their favorite things. Other people can pet them at that point and interact with them.
but they should get most of their affection from their handlers, especially in the beginning of the partnership. But that bond needs to form. And if, you know, the dog says, oh, well, the kid's going to pet me, well, I'm not going to pay any attention to my handler off harness. I'm going to go right for my friend, you know, which is okay, but you have to kind of, if you live with people, you have to find that balancing act, you know, of, you know, well, okay, you can go now, but if I call you to come, you need to come. You know, but the handler still has to be respected and the leader of the pack, as they say. But yes, when they're off harness, they are dogs. And I think sometimes you get general public doesn't get that. You know, they think, I mean, I've had Uber drivers and stuff even ask me, not in a mean way or anything, but they're just like, oh, well, does she work all the time? No. When she's home, she's a dog. She's allowed to play and relax. You know, that's how they de-stress. I mean, a lot of people don't see their guide work as stress, but it's stressful. I mean, they have a lot to focus on to keep us safe. I mean, in fact, this happened to us yesterday. A car came out of a driveway, out of a parking lot, and she had to hit the brakes real quick to keep us safe so that we didn't get hit by the car. I heard the car, but I can't override her decision. You know, I have to trust her and that she's going to make the right decision. I knew the car was probably there, but it was waiting to pull out into traffic. And the street was busy, so I actually didn't hear it moving out, really, because it was kind of inching its way out into the street. And so all of a sudden, I was like, oh, nope, we're not moving, Mom. And then the car actually took off into the street, you know, merged out. So she saw it kind of creeping forward, you know, edging out, which I really couldn't hear. I had a lot of noise to the right. So, you know, they're again, I mean, that's a lot for them. They have a lot to focus on. And they have to, you know, be able to release that stress, you know, just like we have our own stressors, so do they. You know?
Right, and you have that trust and that bond is just, I mean, if you think those who are sighted, you know, you think you play the game, you know, what is it, caterpillar or whatever, where you catch, you know, you catch onto the person's shoulder in front of you, and then that person's the only one that leads you through a room and you have to follow. A lot of us can't do that. We cannot put that kind of trust into somebody. And yet that's, you know, a 15-minute game for at a party. To have that kind of trust in anything, I'm sure it takes some time and effort, too, you know.
Oh, absolutely. And it's effort on both parts of the team. I mean, the team is an 80-20. You know, the team should be a 50-50 effort, you know.
Right.
In terms of navigation. And I think a lot of people don't realize, too, that if you want a dog, you still have to be a proficient cane user. I think that's a big misconception, too, among people. They just think the dog's going to solve all your problems. You know, a lot of people think, you know, oh, I can just tell my dog, hey, let's go to the store. You know, let's go to the store. Well, if you've been to somewhere long enough, your dog might anticipate. You know, if you've been there 100 times, they might look into the turn and say, well, are we going to the store today, Mom? You know, they might look in. And if you are, you can say, oh, good girl, right, you know, or whatever way it is. Or you can say, no, not today. Good girl, let's go straight, you know. So, you know, sometimes I think that's a big misconception out there is people think, oh, well, great, I can just put my cane on the shelf and not worry about it. But to me, even if you have a dog, at least for me, there are times where I still want to keep my cane skills up. What happens if my dog gets really sick and it can't work for whatever, however long, you know, they're injured. They're, who knows what the case, something pretty drastic and they can't work. Well, life doesn't stop. You know, I still need to go to work. I still need to go run an errand. Right. So every once in a while I do take my cane and go on a trip to the store or something just so that I keep the skills up. Because it's different, especially when you don't do it every day.
Right.
But I know there's another handler actually at work where Jennifer and I work, and I know he does the same thing. He will leave his dog and, you know, use a cane. Just keep that a little bit sharp in your mind. But, yeah, that's really important as a blind person. You still have to have good orientation skills. Because, I mean, the dogs aren't perfect. They might cross the street diagonally. Well, you have to get out of that. You know, you have to figure that out. You still have to be able to have the travel skills to figure out,
oh, shoot, we didn't cross straight. We're at the opposite corner. Or, you know we're at the diagonal, just for example. You still have to have good travel skills. And even if you're going to the bus stop, you have to know where the bus stop is. You know, you still have to know where things are. You just use a little different landmarks maybe to get you there.
Right.
You're going to use more what's under your feet, you know, versus then finding that pole or, you know, for example. You just travel a little differently. But you have to have the skills. That doesn't go away.
Well, and I think when you talk about the dogs at rest, too, you know, or playing, you know, it's just like us. You know, okay, we can go to work and we can work and work and work and work and work and, you know, and at some point, we got to go home and relax, you know.
Exactly.
Even people are workaholics. Eventually, you've got to take a break, you know, or else. Yep. So, you know, it's the same
thing. Like my dog's here right now, curled up, taking a nap. We had our walk today and she did really well and she's like, I'm going to sleep.
Cool.
Which is fine.
Okay.
And I think, too, one of the biggest misconceptions of the general public, I just want to throw this out there, is a lot of people know not to pet them while they have their harnesses on, I feel like. But a lot of people really, truly do not understand. Don't make eye contact with the dog. Don't stare at them. If the dog is like, hey, you're looking at me. Well, are you going to pet me? And then they get focused on the person looking at them. And then it's a big distraction to the dog. A lot of people don't understand the eye contact. Because sometimes people think, oh, she's really pretty. Well, that's fine. I don't mind that people tell me she's pretty, whatever. That's totally appropriate. But then I'm like, okay, thank you, you know. And also, you know, talking to the dog. They'd be like, oh, hi, baby. You know, and then you look at them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, no, because then they aren't paying attention to me. They're looking at you, at the person. You know? But yeah, I think one of the biggest problems, I mean, the petting is sometimes a problem, certainly. But I feel the longer I've had dogs, I think the eye contact is more of a problem. Because I've had people, like, sometimes I'll check and, you know, make sure somebody's not petting her. And then people have said, oh, I'm not touching her, but I'm just looking at her. And I'm like, oh, can you just please, you know, not look at her? And if I have time, if I'm like in a checkout line or something or whatever, I'll explain, you know, just kind of what I did, why it's important to not look at her, you know. But or
right.
even like an image or, you know, I try to educate if time permits, but it doesn't always. You know, if you're going to a bus or something, you know, you don't always have time to do that. But yeah, the eye contact is a biggie.
I had not thought about that aspect myself. And I very often, like, you know, wait, there's a harness. So I'm even, you know, it takes a minute to go, okay, see, which school, you know, try to look, oh, which school is that dog from or whatever.
Where's the dog from?
It is kind of distracting. I had not even thought of that, you know, as being part of
it. Especially if you look right at the dog, you know.
Right, exactly. And that's what I'm doing, you know. Hopefully not from the side or the back, but still, like any other person, like person can. You can sense when somebody's staring at you, you know, and they want to know what's going on.
Right, exactly.
Protect the handbook.
Right, they want to know what's going on, and they're like, oh, well, now are you going to pet me or looking at me, you know.
Right.
And then they give the person the eyes, you know. Especially the labs.
All right, cool. Thank you. So there is another big topic that were you done with that, Owen? I don't want to kick off on the show.
Yep, no, I'm good. Go ahead.
I'll switch topics a little bit. So another area that people think about is, oh, wait a minute, how the heck can somebody who's blind live with a child? There's like, no way, you got to be kidding me. Especially if I just can run around, run around and be out of the way. And I'm going to mute Stacey. No, that's not her. That's doing that. You know, be available and know what your kids are doing. So, Jennifer, I'm going to jump to you on that. Since you are the parent of three now grown boys, and how you handle it. And I know we've got at least one question on the line, too, at some point when we get with this. I'll jump to the questions. So so if you would handle that area for us, please, and kind of similarly.
Sure.
You know, some basic things people don't think you can.
So, you know, a lot of blind parenting is very similar to any other parenting, you know, paying attention to your child, loving your child, having your rules and having ways that you're going to function in your house. But with the blindness aspect, what you need is, I mean, I relied a lot on sound. So I had, when my kids became mobile, I used bells to, I had these little things that actually the shoelaces went into these little metal cylinders and you could turn a little cap to close it. So it was, the child couldn't generally unscrew them because they were not easy. And so the bells stayed on their shoes. But I've also known parents that have used, like, they've safety pinned a bell to the back of their child's shirt or, you know, various ways to kind of, so then you can always, especially when you're in your home, you can always hear where your kid is. You know when they're getting into trouble. You know if they're really quiet. I learned really quickly as a parent, when the kid is really quiet, that's the time to go check because they're up to something in general. And as they became more verbal, we worked a lot on, if I call you, you got to answer. You don't always have to come, but you have to answer. So we did a lot of, we played a lot of games in the house where I would call and they'd answer. And, you know, they did that a certain number of times. I was big on treats and, you know, like, you know, you earn your reward. So, you know, you get a little treat. And if they didn't come, you know, or didn't answer a few times, I'd go find them and figure it out and talk about how important it was. And so when we were out, that was sort of an ingrained habit and they would, you know, and we, so each of my kids one time had to leave a place because they weren't answering me and they were, my one son was hiding under a table at the library and I found him with the help of his brother who was very eager to rat him out, but I did find him also. I kind of had an idea of where he usually was likely to hang out. But, you know, and we would leave that place and I would say, look, if you can't answer me, it's not safe and we can't be here. This is important. And they all learned that importance pretty quickly because they generally wanted to be in the place we were. I was also big on, you know, transitions. We did a lot of communicating. And when we walked a lot together. We told stories. We talked. That always told me where they were too, especially when they were older and they weren't wanting to hold my hand all the time. You know, it's not cool to hold mom's hand when you're a 7-8-year-old boy sometimes. So yeah. We did a lot of conversation, which is great anyway, because they would tell me things. We did continuing stories where we would tell, one of my sons would start a story and then, you know, the next person had to continue it and we'd keep going until either they got tired of it or we got close to home. And then generally my middle son would be the one to end it and he'd say, and then they all died, the end. You know, that kind of stopped that whole thing. But that was sort of our, we did a lot of that. Did my kids ever get a cookie because I didn't notice them get a cookie? Yeah, maybe. But does anybody's kids ever get a cookie? My kids have never broken a bone. They've never been in danger. My one son, I do remember when he was about 2, maybe 3, he wanted fudge. I had made fudge, and we'd had fudge earlier in the night. It was holiday time, you know, near Christmas, and he wanted one more piece. And so he'd asked me, and I said no. And I guess that's another thing I did maybe differently than some parents. Till they were older, quite a bit older. They were probably in middle school before I let this kind of get more lax. They really had to ask me what they were eating and stuff. I like to know where they were at, what they were consuming in the day and that kind of thing. So he'd ask me for more fudge, and I said no. And then a little while later, I went to kiss him goodnight, and he smelled like chocolate, like extremely like chocolate. And I said, you went and got fudge, and I told you not to, that, you know, we had this whole class. He goes, oh, how did you know? He was just so shocked. I wouldn't know. He thought he got away with that. So, and it's funny because my mom, who is sighted, and, you know, she'd come to visit, and I'd suddenly start telling the kids to stop doing something, and she wouldn't have known, because I could hear them around a corner. Or, you know, like through a wall, not through a wall, but, you know, a few places where she couldn't see. She's like, how did you know they were doing that? I'm like, because I can hear them. And she wasn't paying attention. She was really good about things that were in her sight line, but she wasn't always paying, you know, attuned to some of that. So it's just doing things different ways. And, you know, you might do something differently. You might, read with your kid. You might have a Braille book and they have a print book, but you can still read and let them and listen to them read, and you can still help correct the words with them, or you each read a chapter or you each read a page. That kind of stuff can still be done. It doesn't have to be that you're reading that same print paper. If my child had homework that I didn't know, sometimes I'd have the teacher send it to me ahead of time electronically. Sometimes she would send me, like when my kid struggled with math when he was younger, she would send me the whole math unit, and I had a reader that helped read some of it, and I could Braille some of it so I could help him with each sheet because he had trouble reading the directions too. So there's lots of ways you can make that work. And now there's even more like scanning apps that will help you read things. Teachers were great about sending notes to me by email so that I could read this field trip permission slip or the note that said, could you please bring snack, or, you know, things like that. And I still volunteered a lot at school. I did a lot of chaperoning of field trips with my kids in small groups. I went in and helped kids read. So I really tried to be involved so other kids and parents wouldn't see me as some scary blind person, just another parent. And we had kids mm-hmm. over, and, you know, it's just a matter of really focusing on what you want. I really wanted to be a parent. I wanted to have kids that, you know, I don't feel like my kids, you know, I guess some people have said, oh, did your kids, they've asked my kids, like, oh, didn't you miss out on so much? And I really hope that my kids, I don't think they did, because we traveled. We went on vacations. We didn't drive to go on vacations. We took a train and went on vacation, or we took a plane and went on vacation. But we still did things like that. We still, you know, did sightseeing and did water parks and did all those fun things that kids enjoy. And they were in, you know, swimming, and they were in activities. And, you know, I didn't want them to, I don't feel like they missed out. I feel like they probably got more walking in. They probably got more public transportation time, but they still enjoyed, you know, a great, they were not taking care of me. That was always a really, people would come up to them and say, oh, it's so great how you take care of your mommy. And that's not, and I would stop and educate and correct that, you know, or, oh, you're so helpful to your mommy. And I used to, at first I would say, no, they don't, you know, they're not helpful. But then my husband said, you know, you really make our son, he looks so sad when you say that, because he does like to help, because all kids like to help, you know, in just lots of ways, you know, like, hey, can you bring me that from over there? I mean, they do that for sighted parents too. So then what I started saying is, he doesn't help me any more than other kids help their parents. And I thought that was really important. And people always said, oh, I bet you pick up your toys so good so your mommy doesn't trip on them. No, they didn't.
No.
And that's okay, because I didn't want to make it a thing where they had to feel like they had to do these extra things or these, you know, things because their mom was a blind person.
Okay.
So I've covered what you wanted.
It's kind of what you want folks to know, to be honest with you. And I don't think we did say that your husband also is blind.
Yes, he is legally blind. That is true. Yep. So neither one of us drive, and he can see some. And the kids were real funny with that too. My son used to ask people, "Do you see like mommy? Or do you see like daddy?" But they've learned that, you know, blind doesn't always mean you can't see at all. There's a lot of variation in that, you know.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Okay.
I think both of you have got background sound going on, by the way.
Sorry about that.
That's okay. That's okay. I just I muted Stacy and hearing. But that's the home life too, and that's the advantage of having, you know, something like this versus, you know, a specific FCC radio. I always say that, you know, that makes it more fun sometimes. Okay. So you just called, so that was good.
I'm actually going to try to move and see if it's a little quieter over here.
Okay.
I'm at work, so I was in my queue, but I'll try to go into our conference room and see if it's a little better here.
Okay, appreciate that.
Does that help at all?
Yes, it does. Thank you. Okay.
Okay.
Very good. Thank you very much. So, all right, I'm going to put Stacy back into the system here. And we've got a question here, and I know they're listening on the computer and the phone. So if you are doing that, I'm going to ask you to mute the computer. I'm going to bring you on the line, the phone number 964, I know has a question. Are you there, caller?
I am.
Hello.
I have
your question, please.
I have a quick question for Jennifer and then a question for both Stacy and Jennifer. For you, Jennifer, I wonder if you could talk about the National Federation of the Blind philosophy around the use of a long white cane, longer than what is typically used, and if each of you could talk about the importance of the National Federation of the Blind in your life and why it's so important to have other blind people connected to you.
Sure. So I would say that the long cane is extremely important to me. So I didn't, before I learned about the National Federation of the Blind, I used to use a very short cane. It was about sternum height, I believe. And I was always running, like it would get stuck in a crack in the sidewalk and I would run up into it and impale myself and it would get into my stomach. And I always hated that. And I talked to a mobility instructor and the one I had at the time said, well, you'll just have to slow down. And I didn't want to slow down. I wanted to go faster. And once I found, I went to a convention, I actually won a scholarship from the National Federation of the Blind of Wisconsin. And when I went to my first convention, I discovered the longer cane. And the reason for it is that it gives you more time to react to obstacles, to things like sidewalk cracks, to stairs. And it means that you can move faster and more freely and more confidently. And I had found myself kind of leaning forward more when I used the shorter cane, and I was able to have a better posture with the longer cane. And I really loved that freedom. It really made me feel more free, more confident. And I think that's a really important piece of why it is so important to have a longer cane and why longer canes really give that. And I don't know the science behind why the shorter canes are recommended, but I know that from experience, I really love that extra reaction time, that extra flexibility of and the lighter weight as well, that it helped me be more confident moving the cane. And to me, the National Federation of the Blind has always been that place where I can find connection, find other blind people that are doing a lot of great things. When I was one of the only blind people I knew, I thought I was pretty amazing. And when I started knowing other great blind people, I realized that I was just a person who happened to be blind and that there's so many other people out there, but it's always been so important to me to have those connections, have those role models, have that empowerment of other people that believe in me and believe in blind people and believe that we can accomplish anything we want to accomplish. And that's what the NFB has always meant to me.
All right. For me, I would say the NFB means similar to me as well. I feel like I had some blind friends growing up just because the public school I went to, I actually went to school in Wausau, Wisconsin, and they actually have a program for blind and visually impaired students. So I had some blind friends growing up, but I didn't have a lot. But once I like Jennifer, got a state scholarship as well, and that was in 2001. And as Cindy had mentioned previously, I guess I should say. And I remember going to that first national convention that year. And I was like, I was 18. I was like, wow, this is quite the place. And it was pretty neat to just, you know, observe all these other blind people just like zooming around the hotel. And oh, here's the Starbucks. Here's the whatever it was. And I was figuring out routes, of course, as well, and traveling in the hotel and such, but it was just kind of cool how quickly people figured out the layout. I was like, oh, man, I need about a week to figure this out. Of course, by the end of the week, I was getting it down, but I definitely feel like it's really nice to have other blind people to connect with, not only in positive times, but maybe just in even some tough times. You know, I know for me sometimes, being a blind person, sometimes it's kind of like, you know, sometimes I have a hard time making new friends or, you know, whatever. And sometimes it's just nice to be able to go to that fellow blind person and say, hey, I'm really struggling with whatever. You know, maybe I haven't been in that Milwaukee area too long, not quite 2 years. In fact, last year I had a situation in 2020 with another dog on a city bus interfering with my guide dog's work. The other dog was not a guide dog. The other dog was a supposed service dog. of some sort. The handler claimed that she was an alert dog. She was a German Shepherd, and that was okay, but she was definitely getting aggressive at my dog twice. And I remember, you know, reaching out to our chapter and saying, hey, does anybody have any resources? After the second incident, I felt I needed to file a complaint. And I did with the transit company, and things went from there, and they were very receptive. But it was nice just to get that, you know, reassuring, yeah, go here. You know, start here, do this. You know, this person's a good resource, and they were. And the issue got resolved. I actually haven't seen the person and her dog since.
Great. And I
Thank
do
you.
Want to say, I mentioned at the beginning of this that this is co-sponsored by the National Federation of Wisconsin and Milwaukee chapter. And so that is why we are focusing on the NFC in particular. And I think part of, I will say that, you know, we do want to support our own organization. I'm part of that as well. And, you know, no matter what you do, find some support system if you are in the situation where you need some support, you know, whatever that might be, organizations, resources, and hopefully with all of what we've been doing here, you're getting that message, and that's what we're trying to do here, you know, how you can be a support to someone who's blind / vision impaired as they choose to use, or how you yourself, if you're in that situation, can do that. And hopefully, you know, you're getting that piece of information. Right, ladies?
Exactly. Absolutely. So, agree.
Okay. Absolutely. So, all right. I know we are getting pretty much on that hour that I like to keep our guests at. There's somebody else that's just listening. I don't see any other particular questions coming up. There are a couple people listening. Just listening, I jumped off a minute to check those. Let me see what I had for general questions or if there's anything. Let's do this. I'm just kind of, we kind of answered this a little bit. But I would like to know what you both think would be the advantages to being blind.
Reading in the dark, huge advantage.
Yeah, that's
kind love of that. being able to function really well even when the power's out is another mm-hmm. one I would say. Not getting so
weird. I have a funny story about that. So I was in college and it was the middle. It was night. I think it was the middle of the night and the power did go out and people were in the hallway just like freaking out because they couldn't, you know, find the restroom or whatever. And I just remember being like, does somebody need help? Like, seriously, everybody was laughing. But I was like, seriously, like, does somebody really need to go there? Like, it was pretty funny.
Those are the major ones, I guess, that jump out.
Well, if something's really disgusting, we don't have to look at it. I can't think of a good example right now, but I definitely know sometimes people are like, oh, I'm really glad you don't have to see this. It's gross. Like, whatever.
<you know. laughs> Okay. All right. If you had to give a suggestion to someone who is newly blind or to someone who's wanting to, quote unquote, help someone who's newly blind, what would be the biggest suggestion or the what you think would be the most helpful suggestion for them?
Don't put limits on a person. Don't try to imagine or to think, oh, if I couldn't see, I wouldn't be able to do this, or I don't know how to say this articulately. If you can't imagine how it could be done, don't assume that it can't be done. I guess that's how I would put it. So if you're thinking, oh, I don't know how I would dress myself, for instance, as if I couldn't see, don't assume that people who can't see can't dress themselves. You know, reach out and find information. Connect to other blind people.
That's what I was going to say, too. Yeah.
Yep. Make sure that, you know, people know they're not alone and that they can connect to great resources like the National Federation of the Blind. We've got a great chapter in Milwaukee, and it's a nationwide organization, so there's chapters and affiliates in all the states. So that's a great resource. You know, find information. Find and don't there is a grieving process I know that people go through, and that's important, but it's also important to move on and not focus solely on what you might be missing out on or what how you used to do things, but focus on the new, some good things that can come out of it, some of the, you know, good life things that you can still enjoy and do and know that you can still live the life that you want to live and a, you know, a very quality life with or without vision or with any level of vision. Just knowing your tools, knowing that different doesn't mean worse. It just means a different way to do something. And you might be slow at it at first in that different way, but that doesn't mean you'll be slow forever because it'll become a habit.
And speed isn't everything.
Sorry, Stacey.
Even with those skills. No, you're good. You know, speed isn't necessarily everything, even with those tools. You know, like Jennifer was saying, you'll improve your skills, you know. But I always think, like, mm-hmm. some blind people, oh, I don't know, maybe they'll see... No, maybe like I know for me personally, I've read Braille menus to blind people at restaurants, and that's fine. I have no problem doing that. And even to blind people that aren't very fluent Braille readers, like I've heard a lot of people, you know, because I read out loud, of course, and they'll say, "Wow, you're so fluent," you know, blah blah. And they're like, "I can never read that fast." And you know, I get that some people, especially if somebody goes blind from diabetes, sometimes their fingers. You know, they do have issues, and they may never, mm-hmm. you know, read at the speed that, say, Jennifer, you and I would, you know, because we mm-hmm. don't have issues mm-hmm. with our fingers. You know, we don't have mm-hmm. that extra mild impairment, you know, in our hands. But it's just kind of like, well, you know what? You read at your own level. You know, that mm-hmm. doesn't mean that you are a bad reader. It's just maybe given your additional issues, you may not. You know, read that fast, and that's okay. Like, you don't have to compare your skills to mine. You know, that's not the important part of it.
Those yeah, that's types, a good point. Don't compare yourself to other people. Connect
exactly.
with people, but don't feel you're inferior to them, or you know.
Yeah,
everybody's
doesn't
different.
Mean that you're a bad person just because maybe you don't travel as well. Maybe you don't travel much out of your, you know, from your home environment or whatever. Or maybe you're a little bit more nervous when you do. Well, that's normal.
Yep.
Like,
but because you hold someone's
be
arm or you do something, you're not
exactly.
a bad blind
okay.
person. You know, you're
exactly.
a blind person that's still out
yep.
there doing stuff. And maybe holding someone's arm makes the most sense at that moment in that situation. That's okay, you know.
Right.
I've heard people
yep.
say, oh,
exactly.
I'm a bad blind person. I'm doing it this way. No, you're a blind person. That this is the way that it's working for you at the moment, you know.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I've taken people's arms in crowds and stuff.
Sure.
You know, even with
sure.
a dog, I'll grab an arm.
Sometimes it makes sense.
I don't. It's quicker. You know, it's faster.
It's the easiest way to follow people.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I have no problem with that if I need it. I use mm-hmm. it. And, yeah, like you said, it doesn't make us bad. It's quicker.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if you're with a friend, you know, going, let's say, to a concert. Actually, I did that. A couple of years ago, I was actually here in Minneapolis, and I went to a concert with my best friend, who's sighted, and we've been friends for over 20 years. And I was fine following her until we got in the arena, and I was like, "I'm going to lose you. There is
mm-hmm.
no way I'm going to follow you." My dog was pretty young at the time; we'd only been together like 6 months, and I'm like, "You know what? She doesn't need this stressful situation, you know." And so I took her arm, just like, "Yeah, let's just go sight a guy." She's like, "Okay, that's
mm-hmm.
cool." So we did.
Yep.
Mm. One of the
but it's all about
I
having
you,
options.
One
yeah,
of the things I bet you don't think about with the Braille is anybody that's played like a string instrument their life.
Oh, yeah.
Will have a hard time reading
yep.
Braille, too.
Sure. mm-hmm. The calluses, yep.
The calluses, mm. and it didn't work. It just did not work. So, yeah, you know, you adapt to that kind of stuff, but. You know, and people think too. Well, you can't read music after. Well, yeah, you can. There's Braille music. Just
sure.
pay attention.
Sure.
There's lots it's of ways to do this that they used to do. So.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So when a sighted person encounters a blind person, what is the
I'm going to go both ways. What is the most helpful and what is the least helpful?
Oh, God. I think
we're
going to
go right
to this,
there.
Jennifer.
Jennifer, you want to start? Sure, I can start.
Okay,
the least helpful would probably be, watch out!
Yes.
Somebody screaming that from a distance is one of the least helpful things I've ever encountered, because what am I watching out for? Are you yelling at me or someone? I mean, it's very nonspecific. The most helpful is someone that just comes up and says, hey, I'm passing you on your left. Do you need any help? Or, hey, there's a gaping manhole about 2 feet in front of you. You might want to go to the left and avoid that. That's helpful, useful information, you know? Or, hey, I'm walking across, the light just turned. Did you want to go, or are you waiting for someone? Anything that's useful and in a pleasant tone of voice, or just someone that says, hi, how you doing, you know, and walks on by. That's great, too.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I would say, too. Oh, I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Stacey.
I would say, too, that another least helpful thing, even if you accept the help, when the person grabs you. Or grab your dog,
oh, absolutely.
Or grab your cane.
That's
a hard one, too. I mean,
yeah.
and even if you, I think one of the other, like, negative ones for me, and I'm sure for you too, Jennifer, is even if you say no and the person doesn't respect your no, you know, that you're okay.
Correct.
Or like Jennifer said, the light changes, let's say, okay? And you're making sure there's not a car going to turn in front of you, you know, especially nowadays with all the lights on reds and all that kind of stuff. You know, sometimes I wait a car or two just to make sure, right, that nobody's going to come around the corner. And, you know, I'll if I have a dog with me, I'll say said dog's name forward. You know, if I have a cane, I'll just proceed. But sometimes people be like, it's safe. And literally, it's been a while now, but I've literally had people push me in the street.
Mm-hmm.
Literally.
I have too. Or grab my arm from behind. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. And it's like, no. Please don't do that.
And there's all kinds
dog
of reasons
no
you might not
you know,
be ready at that moment, you know.
Right, exactly.
If somebody just says, hey, you can go across and keeps going, I'm okay with that because it's not, like, intrusive. It's just helpful. I still might
Absolutely.
Wait. But
at least
you know, especially if it's a really windy
it,
day, sometimes that can be helpful. And I might wait for a second, make sure
yeah.
it's safe, because you don't always put implicit trust in someone.
No, for sure. Yeah, and I think – like I said, I would have a similar answer to Jennifer's most helpful one. And even like if somebody comes up and just says, yeah, oh, do you need help? You know, and I'll say, oh, yes, actually I do. Can you tell me? I was in a parking lot one day heading for the vet. This wasn't that long ago. And this lady was like, oh, can I help you? And I said, well, can you just confirm at the front door? It was kind of an angled turn to the right. And I thought that was the right way. And I was like, oh, can you just confirm, is the front door over here to the right? And I kind of gestured where I stopped. And the lady, honestly, she never really answered my question. She was just like, oh, well, I'm on your right. And I'm like, you did not answer any of my questions. So I just told my dog to go inside, and my dog figured it out, and we were right. But it was just like, no, you didn't help me at all. That's not what I am. But I always like it, too, when people sometimes will say, well, how can I help you? Like,
yeah.
You know, they won't just grab, or they won't just distract the dog, especially, like, in the winter and the snow, or, you know, like Jennifer said, on a real windy day, you just get a little bit off track much easier than other days, you know, when you have even the rain, you know, any sort of element outside especially. And it's just like, boy, I think I'm here, but I'm not sure.
And if someone asks, you can then say, nope, I'm good, thanks, you know, and you can go on your way. But if someone grabs, they're in your space, they're pushing you, that's, you know, really not respectful of anybody. You shouldn't do that to anyone.
Yeah, disabled or not.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Well, that's what I was going to say. You know, think of what you would do with anybody else. If there's, you know, all of us, whether we're in a car, whether we're walking, you know, the light turns, you don't notice it instantly, you don't respond instantly. What would you do to someone that's sighted that doesn't do that? What would you do to someone that's in a wheelchair that would do that? What would you do with anybody else that you would encounter in those situations, you know, okay, the door is open. You could say that, you know. Sometimes you tell some people, you know, as you hold the door, holding the door for you, they're excited. They can see that. So what? You're being, you know, respectful of it. So just in general, I think people, if people think, what would you do with anybody else? You know, you see somebody holding groceries, you ask them, do you need help? You don't just grab their groceries from their arm. They'll go off balance. You'll tear the bag. You know, all those kinds of things, the same thing. You know, grabbing someone's arm, grabbing at, God forbid, their dog, the leash or something, or leading them. You're going to throw them and the dog off balance. You're going to throw the cane. You know, people balance, have come to rely on balancing a certain way with their cane and walking that way. If you grab an arm, we'll throw them off balance, plain and simple. And you may end up hurting someone in the process. So.
Escalators are a big one. I take the train now once a month, and I encounter a lot of escalators doing that. And I know how to get on an escalator. I have my suitcase. I have my cane. I have my backpack. I have it well balanced. I know how to do it. People feel the need, and they want to be helpful. They love to just try to grab me or try to grab my bag or yell at me as I'm getting on the escalator. All in the guise, and it's really disconcerting. And then one guy said that I was rude because I said something like, please don't grab me. And he's like, well, you don't need to be rude. And I said, I'm sorry. I really was afraid I was going to fall, you know, and I'm not trying to be rude, but grabbing me is also rude. So.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah. I hate escalators.
So just think of how you'd want to be helped. Helpful information, a sign that says, hey, use the other door. Telling somebody, hey, there's a sign that says we need to use the other entrance. You want me to help you tell you where that is? You know, that's extremely useful information.
Right.
Or where an empty chair is, like if you're going to a doctor's office. You know, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Like if a blind person, you know, is heading right towards you and you're in the seat, you don't have to get up and move. Or like on the bus, you know, just say, oh, there's, like Jeff said, oh, the seat, there's a seat too.
There's breaking up.
Oh,
Stacy, we're having a hard time understanding you. Stacy, we're having a hard time understanding you.
Try that. Is that better?
Not really.
Oh, I just
not really
took that off. Oh, I don't know why I haven't moved.
Interesting. Wonder what that is. Okay.
I have no idea.
Well, I just heard the breath. That seemed clear. Can we try it again?
Hello?
Okay, that sounded clear.
Is that better?
Okay, go ahead.
Who knows, maybe. I haven't moved, so I don't know why.
Yeah, it's
anyway,
still a little bit choppy.
I was just basically... Okay, sorry. I was just basically saying, you know, finding an empty seat on the bus, you know, instead of someone just getting up from the seat that we're heading towards, you know,
mm-hmm.
you need to vacate your seat. Just tell us
right.
an empty seat is. You know, you don't need to move.
Right, those empty seat things are nice. And again, you
yes.
tell somebody who's looking for one in a in
useful
an
information. Right.
There's
yeah.
a chair over here for you. Well, you'd say the same things as anybody else. Now, the over here wouldn't help you much, but but still, you know, you can tell somewhat by the voice. But, yeah, so that makes sense. Okay, well, is there anything that we did not cover that you wish I had asked either one of you?
I just want to say that in my job, one of my jobs is to help get people jobs. So if anyone might be interested in working for Beyond Vision, we have some openings. You can give me a call at 414-335-3762 or email me at jobs@beyondvision.com. Got to get that little plug in there, you know.
And is that just is
being
that
a recruiter?
Just hey, Jennifer, is that just Wisconsin and the Milwaukee
oh,
area?
Oh, no. Good question. Some of our openings are in the Milwaukee area, but we also have base supply center stores at different military bases across the country. I've got a great opening in Illinois right now. And we also sometimes have remote call center work. So so our main area is in Milwaukee, but not everything.
Okay, good. Because, yeah, we've got international people here. Not that we're going to go international with it, but, you know, so. Stacy,
Anything we missed?
Yes. Boy, I think you really hit the high points for me that I can think of.
Okay. Good. Okay. Well, like I said, the show was sponsored in part by the Milwaukee chapter of the National Federation of the Blind, particularly for what used to be Meet the Blind Month and is now, help me, ladies, Blind Equality Achievement Month.
Yep.
They just did it to me. And the lady were on a call that I wasn't, and it's like, oh, yeah, okay. So we're learning that, which makes more sense. I mean, so today is White Cane Month. You've heard a lot about the use of white canes and the various kinds. Oh, I was going to comment. I think some of the use for some of the shorter canes, especially the folding ones, are people who, you know, don't use them constantly or who are a little self-conscious like I am. I never did quite get into using the straight cane, you know, and it's a change. But, yeah, I can understand how they, you know, you're right. Mine keeps going into cracks, into cracks in the sidewalk. I hate it. You know,
well, and you can use a folding cane that's long, too. There are NFB folding canes. I do have one of those for backup and for, like, concerts and movie theaters and stuff. So, you know, sometimes, I mean, I like my straight cane for the information it gives, but there's times for a folding cane, but I still like a long one.
Okay, well, I'll have to worry about that. There we go. You know, and so there are resources out there and all that for it. And again, this in general is Blind Awareness Month, today being White Cane Safety Day. And we're just hoping that between my guests here, you were able to get some information, get some resources, and all of that. I don't know if you, Jennifer, you gave out a little bit of information if somebody wants to contact you. Stacy, can we connect people with you on Facebook through my, through the Purpose Talk Radio Facebook page? Or do you want to give out any kind of information? Okay. We'll do it that way.
Probably Facebook.
Whatever you want. If people have more want to talk to you folks directly, we can do that.
Facebook's fine. I could give my email too. That's fine too. My email is precious, like something is precious. No capital letters. So and Facebook is an option as well then.
Precious, P-R-E-C-I-O-U-S 0109 at gmail.com. Okay, perfect.
Correct.
And
you got
it. Jennifer, you through the work number. Okay, well, great.
Jobs
thank
at beyondvision.com.
Okay, very good. And I appreciate you. I appreciate our callers and all of our listeners today. The one caller did drop off after we got her question answered, so that was great. I mean, it wasn't great that she dropped off. It was great that she got her question answered. So I thank you both for being here. I'm going to put you back into where you can hear the end of the show. I realized I didn't have you listening to the beginning of the show. And you can hear the wrap-up of this, and we'll summarize a couple of things. I'll put you up.
Well, thank you so much for having us.
Thank you so much, Cindy.
Thanks. Okay, so again, we have Stacy Fuhrer and Jennifer Wenzel as our guests today, as you heard from as I just said about just giving you general information about living with or well being blind. There we go, use that person first terminology that we're learning to use in the world right now. So I appreciate their time, their energy for doing that. You can hear this show again at the same link where it was broadcast live for anyone who wants to share it. I will put up the Purpose Talk Radio Conversations post, which I realize I did not. If you have any further questions that you'd like to reach them or didn't catch the information on how to contact either of them, and we can put any questions there that might be pertinent to this subject. If you want to be a part of this show in the future or have topics that you'd like to discuss, please do email me at cindy@purposetalkradio.com, C-I-N-D-Y. At purposetalkradio.com. And I think with all of that, you know, we love having guests. We love talking to people. So the final part of our show is our theme song called I Am Who I Am by the group True Trinity. And again, the vocalist on that is Jillian Clark, the writers Jillian, Rachel Grace, and myself. Oh, I'm sorry, I forgot one thing. I have a positive affirmation that I'd like to give for this show, and I forgot to ask the ladies if they had that. So let's see. Let's do something with. Let's see. I'm going to do, I'm typing as I think. Okay, I see with all of my senses and am capable. There we go. There's our affirmation for the next show. I see with all my senses and am capable is our affirmation for this one. So we will close out with I Am Who I Am. And until next time, I wish you all soul blessings. Thanks for listening.
I am me, I am who I am who I'm gonna be. Walking in the spirit moment by moment, fulfilling my own destiny. I am me, I am who I am who I'm gonna be. Walking in the spirit moment by moment, fulfilling my own destiny. Walking in the spirit moment by moment, fulfilling my own destiny. Walking in the spirit moment by moment, fulfilling my own destiny.